Welcome to the 110th edition of the Gooner Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Dudo, and we're convening on a Monday evening 2 days after the 6-1 defeat of Southampton, the weekend before we face Manchester City away. So who is joining me for our new style extended once-a-month offering? Incidentally, before that, I should say we've had a number of requests to record one of these every week, until we find a sponsor who's willing to fund the food, drink, and venue hire with that frequency, you will have to make do with us every 4 weeks. Any major conglomerates interested should get in touch with the Gooner via the usual channels. On the panel this evening is the man you may well be speaking to if you did want to pour money into this aural indulgence. He's the original editor of the Gooner, which began its life almost 25 years ago, before handing over the reins in 2000. However, he's still very much the publisher of your matchday dose of non-club propaganda. It's a warm welcome to Mr. Mike Francis.
Evening, David. Readers?
same people. Uh-huh. Next up, he's just returned from the Far East once again. They think he must be a superstar out there, as no one of his age wears their hair like he does until they've got serious money behind them. The popular theory in Osaka is that he's an ex-member of Deep Purple, circa 1975. So it's konnichiwa once more to Mr. Joe Broadfoot.
Konnichiwa, I didn't bring my guitar, sorry about that.
And finally, the return of an occasional but always welcome guest panellist who never fails to bring us some glamour and a bit of leather to enhance our evening. She's representing Gunner Talk, as well as the actual football fans rather than corporate freeloaders that watch their football from club level. It's a warm welcome back to Miss Lindsay Melrose.
Hello.
Right, guys. So since we've done the last podcast, we had games versus Stoke, slightly dodgy, but, you know, doing okay, 0-0 away from home at Stoke, Tony Pulis and his fans and that kind of thing. Liverpool win 2-0 away from home, and Southampton, we win 6-1, everything's back to normal, we're up to third place, we're going to win the league, aren't we? I mean, Lindsay, what do you think? Isn't it nice to feel this optimistic, or is this just the calm before the storm?
Well, I think, if anything, last season has taught us that when you get a good high, enjoy that buzz. Because you just don't know what's around the corner. So it's back to basics with Arsenal fans at the moment. Cheer the win, enjoy the fun, enjoy the goals, and stress about tomorrow. But it is looking worryingly good at the moment.
Bloody hell. So if it rains at Manchester City on Sunday, Vermaelen gets sent off after 10 minutes, we might as well hang ourselves, shouldn't we, Joe?
Well, put it like this. I'm not expecting this run to continue much longer.
Oh, bloody
sorry,
hell.
Sorry to put a dampener on things.
The optimism lost.
Seriously. Yeah, because, I mean, beating Southampton 6-1, it's a good result. It's not a great result because we let in a goal. Chesney shouldn't have dropped the ball and he shouldn't have come out thinking his Pat Jennings can catch the ball with one hand. I don't know what he was thinking of. I don't know why Arsene Wenger played him in the first place, because Mignolet's been doing okay. Not amazingly well, but he's doing okay. And we have a bunch of okay goalkeepers at the moment. So that's not really title... They don't look like title-winning contenders at all to me. But we look like a top three club, which is what I predicted before we started. So we're about where I thought we would be, unless we spent big. I'm not saying spend big just for the sake of spending big. I'm saying spend big and bring in the one or two decent players that we need to just strengthen this squad.
The extra defender, the extra midfielder, maybe the extra striker.
And we all knew that we need that. Coquelin against... I love Coquelin to bits, but he's only 21 and he's not quite the finished article yet, and he might not be for another 2 years, and he might not ever be. And then we've got Jenkinson at right back, who's a bit the same as Coquelin. He's improving a lot. He's getting better all the time. A couple of straight passes. Didn't really like what he was intending to do. I didn't know what he was thinking of. He's got great feet and he's quick and he's got a lot going for him, but unfortunately, again, not the finished article. So can we win the league with 9 players that are good enough to do it, or possibly 8? I'd say no.
In short, people, we're weak. Mike, seriously, it must look better from where you sit, surely.
Yeah, I think I'll hide the pistol now before Joe gets his hands on it. I agree with some of what Joe's saying. I'm not going to suddenly sit here and go, yeah, we're going to win the league, because there's a long way to go for starters. But the signs are promising, and this group of players just seem to have something about them which last year before even didn't have. We were talking just before we started recording about the game on Saturday against Southampton, and you know, when Southampton got a goal back. And there were a few people saying, oh God, it's Newcastle all over again. And you're going, no, it's not. Look at the players in front of you. And, you know, it, they just don't give off that impression that they're going to collapse. And I say that ahead of playing Man City and Chelsea, which probably means I will now look stupid. But, you know, won't be the first time, sure, won't be last. But yeah, no, I mean, I don't expect us to win the league, but who knows? Stranger things have happened.
Oh, crikey. I mean, yeah, I'm not saying I necessarily think that we're going to win the league whatsoever, but having said that, I mean, this time last year, we'd gone down 8-2 at Manchester United, struggled for a 0-0 draw away at Newcastle. And to be honest, it was half me thinking about exchanging my season ticket for £1,200 and a place in the team at Leighton Orient as much as anything else. But
the thing is, Dave, a lot of that was down to the fixture list. Because last season, I was looking at the fixture list and I thought we'll be lucky to come out of this with many points. Mm. I mean, Newcastle away had it down as a draw, and Man U, it was a defeat. It was a heavy defeat. That's the only bit I got wrong, I think, apart from that. And Liverpool at home, I didn't expect us to lose. I expected a draw.
This time around, when you looked at it before the start of the season, first three games, Sunderland at home, we're probably all expected to win.
Yeah.
Stoke away?
Draw.
Draw.
Yeah.
Liverpool away?
A draw.
So we got 5 points.
We did all right.
We got the same number of points. We've just gotten from the wrong order.
We got 1 point more than what I expected.
But this season's so different because we've started from such a more positive place, haven't we? I mean, last season was, I think, let's not even bother going all over that again, but we had the summer of hell. And this season, our business was done early. We still didn't have a great pre-season, I don't think, in terms of fitness. But we come into the season with a group of players that knew each other and had been around each other and had started that vibe that Mike was talking about. It has shown, I think. They seem collectively more a team this year.
Yeah, I'd go along with what Lindsay's saying because, I mean, the team ethic is better, sorry to say it, or maybe I should be pleased to say it, without Robin Van Persie. Looks more of a team. So that's a reason to be positive. And another reason to be positive is Steve Bould, because the warm-up is different. It's different now because, I mean, I've only seen one game at the ground this season. And Steve Bould has changed the warm-up slightly and I just thought the guys, I mean, they're playing proper sort of five-a-side like a lot of the other clubs are doing and as a warm-up. We weren't doing it under Pat Rice. I never saw us do it anyway. Mm. And all the games I attended, I didn't see us do it once. So he's bringing, very slowly, he's changing things. And already we've seen the effect, we've seen the near post corners and all sorts.
So much fun. I don't get excited about anything in games apart from when we get a corner. I mean, last season and, well, five seasons before that, I hated us getting corners at a rate of time. Now, you've got Boldy on the near post being the 246 tall Per Mertesacker. I do like our new chant now. Big fucking German, we've got a big fucking German. Well, kind of, Desmond says on tin. But yeah, Boldy's brought that into the side. It's very exciting.
Yeah, and he's definitely making a difference, I feel. So, you know, defensively, we do look stronger as a team. So I do like the way we're shaping up, but I just wish we could have brought in those two additional players that would have made a difference. And, you know, maybe three, because like I said, I would like a goalkeeper to be really pushing Chesney, because Chesney, he seems... I don't know what's up with him. I mean, I think he's a great goalkeeper, potentially, but he's not proved it yet on a sort of day-in, day-out basis, and he needs to. After that performance, it was atrocious. His kicking out was appalling, and his handling, obviously, for the goal, I don't really know where his head was at for that. I just don't know.
I mean, thinking about that, I mean, you look at our goalkeeper, you look at the cover we've got at right back at the moment. Also, you know, if, God forbid, Cazorla got injured tomorrow, he's going to fill in that role. And if Giroud carries on not scoring goals, he's going to play up front because it can't be Jovinho. With all the talk that was going on the last couple of weeks of August, with Wenger saying, yeah, I'm still in the market. A lot of talk about Nuri signing for us before bugging off to Liverpool. I mean, it would appear that we were still in the market. We wanted some extra players. Yeah, Arsenal being Arsenal, we just coming out about £25 million profit during the transfer market. I mean, Lindsay, what do you think? I mean, were you frustrated that the club just once again settling on posting a huge net profit on transfers? Or do you think it's okay? Would you have bought some more players?
Of course, I would have bought. You know, there's no... my argument previously has been that with a lot of youth, which I think the balance is much better this season, much better. But I always think that if you blood too many youth and you play players that you know aren't ready without experience around them and without a squad to back them up when they get the inevitable injuries that a 21 or a 22-year-old will get with playing that many games, that you're not teaching them anything. You're not giving them the tools to actually get that winning mentality and push them over the line without players like a Santos behind you or someone who can come in if Gibbs is injured and do a job. And yeah, of course, like Joe, I don't know what he's drinking, but if you think we were going to get another four players, that was just ridiculous. But I would have been happy with one or two, because I think there's a lot of areas that are now sorted. I think at left back and right back we're a little bit weak. At goalkeeper, I think there's issues. I think the central defence is a lot better than it's ever been. I think midfield, actually, if we're injury free, is very vibrant. And again, up front, we're relying on whether Giroud's going to turn out to be as big a goal scorer as he has a knob. So, you know, if you're not saying that,
no,
have you not seen Giroud's knob?
Is this a PG rated version?
Am I the only one who's seen his knob?
Yeah, well, you know.
I've seen it on the internet, not real life.
Sounds like in the pictures he's next to Kate Middleton. Sorry, please.
But yeah, so obviously, you know, that's always the argument with Wenger, isn't it? It's always that when it comes to that shitty period after Christmas where there's players that have gone down, that people are breaking down, we don't have that extra fresh legs to push us over the line, and it could again this year be an issue.
Mike, there's a brilliant article in this current issue of the Gooner called Arsene Prove Me Wrong by some...
who would that be by?
It's David Udo, actually.
Oh, that's funny, that.
He's a very, very handsome young man, I'll have you know. But because, well, we do maintain this 4-2-3-1. We're going to play it for the rest of the season. And as far as that two are concerned, we start with Diaby and Arteta. We've also got Coquelin, we've also got Frimpong. He may well play Wilshere when he comes back as well, and Ramsey can fill in there. Yet on transfer deadline day, let's not fuck around, Arsenal were after Michael Essien. Do you think Wenger secretly thinks underneath it all, you know what, it's not quite right, we do need a little bit more, and he was after more players in that last week?
I think he probably was after more players. I'm not convinced by the Essien rumour. I know a lot of people were talking about it, but Essien was in Monaco at the time, if I remember rightly, for the
European Super Cup.
So I'm not convinced that there were legs in that one. But I agree with these two. You know, I'd have loved to have bought another couple of players. It was frustrating, you know, transfer deadline day. One of my mates just got Sky for the first time. God only knows how he managed to survive this long. And all his mates. Hello, Mike. All his mates were telling him how great transfer deadline day was on Sky. Yeah. And he sat there and he goes, it's the most depressing moment of my entire life. And, you know, we all felt like that, didn't we? You know, I don't think there's any Arsenal fan out there that didn't want us to sign a player who was completely happy with what we had. But, you know, that's the Arsenal way these days. I think midfield, I do think we've probably got enough players there, in all honesty. I find it a little bit, I don't know whether I'm just trying to be clever here, but which would be a first, but having a defensive midfield player, why do you need a defensive midfield player? You need a midfielder who has the nous to do a job, which Arteta has got.
Yeah.
You know, and no one would ever class him as a defensive midfield player, but he knows when to stay deep. Mm. And you know, I think Wilshere has that as well. I mean, I think he, you know, if he comes back fit and he's going to be back in training this week, then he's perhaps got that ability as well. If you've got two players there, one goes forward, the other sits deep and doesn't go, oh, I'm going to go forward now because I think we need another man, you know, and just does his job, then I think we've probably got
kind of like Man United team when, in fairness, they had Keane playing next to Scholes.
Yeah. And I mean, Keane was, when he first broke on the scene, was in the opposition penalty area more often than not. It was only as he got older that he dropped back. So
I make Mike right about Arteta, because Arteta's filled in and done much better than Alex Song in the games I've seen, and certainly against Southampton, Arteta looked amazing. So I was really pleased. But one thing we've got to bear in mind is Arteta's injury record is not the best. And then the other players being talked about, like Jack Wilshere coming in and filling in there, one, he's not overly experienced, and two, he's also got this poor injury record, unfortunately, and three, what's he going to be like when he first comes back? I think it's going to take a long time.
But then you've got Coquelin as a backup. Now, you said you liked him.
Yeah, I like him.
You don't want him to be
first choice. Yeah, yeah.
But you've got to give him some games.
No, I know.
Now, as a backup, he's going to get some games.
But he's not going to.
That's
all.
If he's a backup to a backup, he's never going to get games. He'll go off in January.
Yeah, that's true. He has talked about leaving. But the thing is, I mean, to me, he's a sort of 10 to 20 game season player. That's all. No more than 20 games for Coquelin, unfortunately. Because he's not had the previous experience, and he's not really... I mean, in that game against Southampton, which was not the most difficult opposition, he's giving the ball away, not under pressure, a couple of times. It's not a lot, but it's more than enough for a decent team to capitalise on it. And again, Jenkinson, the same. These guys looked pretty good against Southampton. All the team looked pretty good against Southampton. They made a couple of mistakes, but when they weren't really under pressure, they made a couple of mistakes. And when people start making unenforced errors, I just get a bit worried about it. When it's against Southampton, bottom of the league.
But I think what Mike was saying is true. You're back to the discipline. If you've got the personnel there that know what job they've got to do and they've got the awareness, I think a lot of people were clamouring for a DM because of, you know, sometimes with Song, you just, I don't know what anyone thought, what was he doing? What was he? Where was he supposed to be? At what time was he supposed to be where? And that people were concerned that there were these holes creating that was weakening our back four, which were already sort of heads up their ass in a tailspin. So I think when you've got the players that you've got and you've got someone like Steve Bold who is clearly working on positional aspects of the game, especially when it comes defensively, those players can do that job. So necessarily do we need a Mavilla or a Fellaini? I'd love a Fellaini, but I can understand why, if he didn't get what he didn't get, why he thinks it's okay.
Yeah, why didn't we make a bid for Fellaini, for instance? I mean, we all know that would improve the team. It would cost 20 million, that's why. But we've got 20 million, so why don't we spend it on a world-class player? I mean, if he looks world-class for Everton, imagine how good he's going to look for Arsenal.
Because he could kill somebody.
Yeah, I imagine that's where the notion of the money burning a hole in your pocket comes from. I mean, I suppose from that point of view, obviously, Arsenal do have so much money in the club players' account, or whatever it's called, that we can spend money on. But having said that, you look at our first 11, let's say you start Arteta and Diaby, and then your three in front of that are Podolski, next to Wilshere and Cazorla, and then up front on his own you've got Giroud, who just has to hold the ball up, or failing that, Jovinho's proven that maybe he can play there a little tiny bit, or you play Podolski there and Oxlade-Chamberlain on the left. You think, you know what?
Actually,
as far as those six players of the team's concerned, that's all right. And our two centre-halves didn't work quite well together again. But anyway, going back to the last week of the transfer window, something that seemed to... Well, it's an issue we've had on our mind for at least the last 18 months, but didn't really come to the front until the Van Persie thing sorted itself out. It was Theo Walcott, whose contract was running down. And, you know, he started off the season on the right wing, where his first touch of the year summed him up, wasn't it? Ball over from the centre of the park, fell to his feet, and let it nutmeg him and went off for a throw-in. Since then, there was talk that he's going to leave. He wasn't going to sign a new contract, and Arsenal being Arsenal, just have to make some profit. We just have to make some profit on these short-term capital items, like players, as they're known. However, Arsenal being Arsenal, Sarah Terran said, no, we're going to sort something out. And since then, he's essentially been dropped. Mike, what do you think is going to happen with Theo?
It's a weird one, isn't it? Like, you know, Wenger said very clearly when we sold Van Persie that if you've got a player who's in last year of his contract and has made it known he's not going to sign, you've got to sell him. 2 days later, you've got a player who's not signed a new contract and last year of his contract, we're going to keep him. It's like, right, okay, explain that one to me. You know, you're an intelligent guy, Arsene.
Are you expecting him to make sense after all this? Do you still listen to what he actually says?
Well, no, I don't, actually. That's the thing. But I go on Twitter a lot, and people down there tell me what he said, so I can't get away from it. But, yeah, no, it's a weird one. I really don't understand it. Don't get me wrong, I don't think Theo is worth 100 grand a week. No way. I don't think there's any Arsenal fan that would probably pay that, even in the current market. I would say that 75 grand a week, which is what he's on, is probably about right. It's probably not, it's give or take. He was quite effective last year, to be fair to him. I don't know how many goals he got in the end, about 10?
11, I think it was.
11, about a similar number of assists, which I think was probably top five or six wide players in the Premier League.
And big game goals. He got big game goals.
Yeah, he scored against Chelsea away in games, I think.
He got Tottenham goals as well, didn't he? I'd persevere with him, but not at 100 grand a week. If he wants 100 grand a week, you're going to have to find it from somewhere else. And I think that's the problem, is nowhere else was willing to pay it. Even Liverpool bought it, didn't they? If Kenny had been there, I'm sure they'd have paid him 200 grand a week, but you know, Kenny's long gone.
It's a good point, actually. If we've got £35 million for Andy Carroll, we could have got 250 bajillion pounds for Theo Walcott.
But talking of that, I mean, look at James Milner, his teammates with England. James Milner's on a lot more money than Theo, and there's no way in this world that James Milner's got more to offer in an attacking sense than Theo. Defensively, you could argue James Milner's going to look after his fullback a bit better, but he's not going to offer much going forward. And let's face it, the premium money is on your forward play.
That's Man City, isn't it?
Yeah,
Man City will pay.
Yeah, silly money,
stupid money. You know.
Yeah, but unfortunately, that's inflated the market. So personally, I would offer him 85. I wouldn't go to 100, even me. And I'm, as everyone knows, I'm a big fan of Theo, but I wouldn't pay him 100 grand.
Well, if my salary is supposed to go from £75,000 a week to £100,000 a week, I mean, that's a one-third pay rise. There is more chance of Lord Lucan riding Shergar into my office than there is of that happening where I work at the moment. Lindsay, do you want Theo to stay, or do you think it's time to say, you know what, Oxlade-Chamberlain's better, Jovinho's doing a better job there, Podolski does it well on the left, I've got no need for him in the side.
It's a really difficult one. I like Theo. I like the Theo of last season, and I think that it would be a shame to let a player that who is now, to me, seeming like he's hitting maturity, go and potentially another club reap the rewards of what is a genuine talent. I do think he's talented. I don't think he's just quick. I do think he has got it. I think his ball distribution is a world better than he was 2 or 3 years ago. As an England international and hanging around with knobs like John Terry and Frank Lampard, he's obviously been told he can get a lot of money elsewhere. He's obviously going to be one of the poster boys for the England campaigns from now on. So his head has probably been turned by the dollar sign. What is a reasonable wage is what Mike said, it deems what other clubs will pay for him. If he was playing at Chelsea, he would obviously get a lot more than 75 grand a week as an England international and the kind of player he is. So we have to expect that if we want to keep him, we're going to have to up his money. No question about it. I don't want him to go because, A, like I said, I don't want his potential realised anywhere else. And B, we are trying to build a squad here. So if he goes, you know, where's that option? It's lovely to have the option of the Ox or Podolski or Theo or there, because different games call for different tactics. And another thing that we've had is when things go wrong, we haven't looked at the bench and gone, right, he's coming on. You think, oh geez, who's on the bench? Oh look, it's, you know,
Anthony Jeffrey,
and you know, there's Oshavin eating his fish and chips or his Harry Bow or something, you know. So I don't want Theo to go in respect to the fact that I do generally think he can add something. Whether he'll be happy with the situation as it is, that he has been effectively dropped and maybe won't get the kind of figure that he thinks he will, that will determine it. And who's willing to buy him? I mean, there seems to be a lot of interest from Chelsea and Liverpool that keep coming up. Mm. But then Liverpool were fucking about over £1 million with Dempsey, so who knows what they're going to do.
But why should they buy him when he's available on a free next summer? And for foreign clubs, he's available, they can start talking to him in January, so they can get him on a free pretty soon as well. So
but are they going to pay him much different to us? Are they going to say,
think they'll give him a better pay increase than Arsenal are prepared
to. But they can afford to give him 100 grand next year, can't they? Because there's no transfer fee to pay.
Do you know what I mean? We don't need to buy somebody else. Mm. Because if we're going to, again, get rid of Theo, the same old problem is you're going to have to buy somebody and you're going to have to pay them X amount per week. Or we go lower than the standard of Theo. And I don't want to keep doing that, replacing with a potential. You know, what's the point of replacing him with someone who is going to accept 75 grand a week, but you've paid 10 million for him or whatever? It doesn't make sense to
me. The other thing with Theo, what I can't understand is Arsene Wenger keeps saying he's a striker, but plays him on the wing. And Theo says he's a striker, but he's still playing on the wing. Mm. Then we see Jovinho, who's, well, apart from the other day against Southampton where he managed to get 2 goals, hasn't really shown much sort of prowess in front of goal, in my opinion. He's got a couple of goals, great. One game against Southampton. Let's see how he gets on. Would he score as many goals as Theo played in that position? I don't think so. But Arsene Wenger, is he going to do it? Why does he keep talking about it and not doing it? Somebody needs to explain that to me.
You know, he's been saying it for 5 years, ever since we bought him. They just said, I'm going to turn him into a centre forward. He just needs to learn his trade out there. It's damn indignant. He hasn't bloody learnt his trade out there, so we're still playing him out there. And Jovinho playing up front on Saturday was kind of a message, wasn't it? You know, it's like, Theo, that was meant to be your position, but I've had to bring in old forward.
It's like Bullseye. Right? Let's have a look at all you could have won. She's 14. She's fresh off the plate. Yeah, I know. We've all seen that. It is a worrying thing about Wolgacki. I remember once, it was about 3 or 4 years ago, we had Porto at home in the Champions League, and we played him up front because we were resting players at that point. He scored 2 goals that night, and he did look like a young Thierry Henry, unfortunately. I was the only person watching that game, as Wenger clearly wasn't, which is a shame. But looking at the Walcott issue, I mean, Arsenal are famous for certain, policies of what they do with certain contracts. I mean, there was all that thing throughout the mid-noughties with, if you turn 30, you're only getting a 1 year extension. Bad luck, Dennis. Bad luck, Robert. You know, and you had that nightmare of Pires pissing off to Villarreal and looking actually really quite good. Should have had him for 2 years. Edu went off to Valencia because now you can only have 2 years, because at the end of that 2 years you're going to be 30 and you won't be able to walk. Ironically, he couldn't walk because he kept doing his anterior cruciate ligament. But nowadays, what we seem to be doing all
all the time is letting players' deals run down to the last year of their contract. Mike, do you think this is something to do with Mr. Cranky and his friends, and it's just a new way of operating? Because these players, it is just short-term capital, different bits and bobs.
That's seen that way, doesn't it? I mean, we've been stung, well, I don't know, I've lost count of how many times we've been stung by it now, but you'd think we would have learned, and if we wanted to.
Mm.
And the fact that Walcott is into the last year of his contract, and Van Persie was allowed to get there, and Sanya's the next one, I think, on the list.
Yep.
He's under 2 years left on his contract now. You start thinking, well, that must be the common policy then.
Yeah.
Because why else would you allow it to happen year after year after year?
It's a very worrying thing, that bearing in mind David Silva's had two decent years at Manchester City, still had 3 years left in his contract, but they've given him a brand new contract today. Presumably he didn't get an extra, you know, 20 pence an hour, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Lindsay, what do you think? Is it Arsenal just doing something new and we're going to be stuck with it for the rest of Stan running the club?
I don't think it's 100% as clear cut. There are issues, for example, Van Persie's injury record. Sanya's had two broken legs, hasn't he? There are, and there is a point where you get to say, well, if you've got 3 years and you signed them up at X amount per year, why would you then up it at that point when they haven't actually done anything different to earn that pay increase? So there is a fine line. Again, some of the players we've lost, there have been other issues, Cesc being one of them. I think Nasri was just a knob, so that was going to happen. But yeah, it is worrying. It's worrying because it's almost like you feel it's inevitable, and the nerves hit the players and the nerves hit the fans, and the players are in the position where they can say and blame it on ambition, well, we're not doing this so I can, you know, I can piss off. and feel like they're justified and it's not about the money. So there is a real fine line. I know we've extended the ox, haven't we, and we've just put his money up. So they're obviously looking at performance-related issues now. I don't think there should be a policy. I think they should take it player by player. And if a player is performing, for example, Arteta, and you think, you know what, he's not going to go anywhere else, but he deserves X amount, then bang it to him. The same with back. If you feel that his injuries have been unlucky and they're not going to be an ongoing issue with his legs or whatever, then up his money and put him... Then do the deal early. But you can't have... I don't think you can ever have a policy. We've proved that the over 30 rule didn't work. It wouldn't have worked for Paul Scholes, would it? You know, like, look at that. Teddy Sheringham, for example. I know they're obviously rare examples, but there shouldn't be a policy. It should be done on a player-by-player basis. Their performances should be taken into consideration, and their longevity towards the club should be taken into consideration. And then, at the end of the day, their sell-on value, I suppose, too.
Yeah.
I think I'd have to slightly disagree with that, because of nutty Nigel Winterburn. I think he said something along the lines of 18 months to go on the contract, that's when it should be renewed at the very latest. Because, I mean, look what's happened with Van Persie, obviously.
They must know before 18 months whether they want to keep a player or not. What I'm saying is they can't start negotiating it at 3 years, potentially.
Mm. No, not when there's 3 years.
Yeah, so
I'd say 2 years. When it's two, me personally, after 2 years, I'd say, right, you've got this little window of opportunity to negotiate a new deal with the club, and if by January the winter transfer window, so we've got a couple more transfer windows to go before we could possibly sell you. If you don't agree a deal by this date, sorry, you've gone. I would just do it like that. I mean, I'd be strict about it. Even Theo, he would be gone. As much as I think he contributes a lot to the team and so on and so on, I'd say, look, I don't like all this gentleman's agreement stuff. I don't like it, because we've been screwed over in the past. By Barcelona, for instance. You know, Fabregas, it was supposed to be a gentleman's agreement that they wouldn't come in for him, and look what happened. And then I don't really know what happened with that, because we seem to have him tied down to a long-term deal, and he's still with someone.
Are we partially victims of the fact that we're not the apex predator anymore? Would this be such an issue if we were winning the league every year and we were paying the big money? Is it now so much of an issue for us because we know there were sharks circling, waiting to look at whoever we've got? So obviously it's much more of an issue for us than it ever has been before.
I think we tend to oversimplify it as well, don't we? We sort of say, you know, like Joe said there, oh, well, if you get to 18 months and you haven't signed a new contract, we're selling you. Well, you can only sell a player if they sign a contract with another club. If they don't want to, you're stuck with them, you know, because you've got another 18 months that you've got to carry on paying them.
But the
what do you do? Do you keep them and play them because they're a good player, or do you go, well, I'm sticking you in the reserves, and then we're still paying them and we're not getting any value at all?
But look what we've done with Walcott.
There's too much power on the players.
They've got the power, it's true, but the point is they're also in a bit of a, you know, they're not in a win-win situation, because if they go on the bench like Arshavin has, and Arshavin's, I mean, a lot of people are saying Arshavin's crazy to have stayed at Arsenal. He had sort of opportunities to go elsewhere.
How does his £90,000 as the best paid player at the club keep him on the bench? I've got no idea why he's here. No idea.
Yeah, but it's only going to last another year.
I think so.
I mean, and then he's off.
Mm.
And to where? And now he's had to sacrifice his place in the international side. I'm sure he's not too pleased about that, because he's not going to play for Russia while he's on the bench.
But there are two kind of football players, aren't there? The ones that will play for anything and will just want to play football, and the ones that are quite happy to get splinters up their arse and earn the big money every week. And Arshavin, I think, is slightly falling into the latter category.
Well, we've got this problem where people do sort of wear their contract down, and we start worrying whether they're going to leave. And obviously last summer we let our two best players at the time go, being Nasri and Fabregas. The summer just gone, we've let our only really, really good player at the time leave, being Van Persie. Yet last week, our chairman, Mr. Ivan, Mr. Gazidis, comes out and states that we're the most ambitious club in football. Mike.
Thanks.
Why is it... Mr. Edison, Mr. Publisher. Why is Ivan saying that? And is he high?
God, who knows? It was the most bizarre interview, wasn't it? It was like,
yeah.
You know, the timing of it, it was like, why now? You know, it's like, and why are you saying that? You know, I mean, I have, and I know there are some people, mentioning no names, that believe that I have that my hand up Gazidis' arse, or rather he has his hand up mine, perhaps. But, but you know, I tend to think he's a good guy. I think he's probably in a difficult situation. He knows Wenger runs the club. He knows Kroenke loves Wenger, and therefore, what the hell can he do? So I do have some time for Gazidis, but the interview last week sent him down in my estimations a bit, because it was just badly timed, and there was no need to say anything. One, and two, the stuff that he did say was just like everyone was just sat there going, "Really? You're not fooling anyone, mate. Not this time. You may fool a lot of people a lot of the time, but this time." Most ambitious club in the world. Not convinced.
Are they for you, Lindsay?
I can't tell you how many times my bum turns inside out every time someone from Arsenal officially speaks. It's just, you know, there can't be any more room in any of their mouths for any more feet. And it's always at a time when you just think, oh, shut up. Like, we don't need that again. And it just kicks off, doesn't it? Everyone starts again. No, obviously, we're not the most ambitious club. So, you know... That's kind of marketing speak to me, which I think Arsenal have had enough of, and Arsenal fans have had enough of, to be fair.
Could just be one of those things. I mean, Tom Fox goes and speaks so well in his meeting with the AISA, and Gazidis thinks, you know what, we're on a roll. You know, let's carry on with the surfing.
But I think that's, I mean, what Lindsay says there is a good point. It's like, are they so far removed from the fans that they just don't know what is going to piss us off? And they go ahead and do it anyway. You know, there's so many times.
That's the worrying part about it.
Wenger, I accept, because he gets, to an extent, because he gets put in front of the press every week and, you know, is forced to say something. And being the person that he is, he answers every question extremely honestly. Mm. He's a fool for doing so, but, you know, that's him,
sure.
Fair enough. But, you know, when you've got Gazidis doing it, and the amount of times you log onto the website and you go, you know, oh, fucking, we haven't signed anyone, you know, oh God. And you read a story saying, you know, that we've signed some 17-year-old goalkeeper from Macedonia.
Dijan Iliev. Yeah, big time.
And it's like, that's really kind of the last story I want to read. You know, so you do just think, they're not listening to us, or they're not in tune with us at all.
But it is worrying, isn't it? That's the worrying thing. Are they just, you know... Is he just making a statement saying the kind of spiel that, you know, that a schmoozer says to get you to sort of just... Or does he actually generally think that? Because if he generally thinks that, you know, there'll be a lot of people that will be scratching their heads at the prices that we pay if that's the ambition that we show.
Yeah, he definitely needs his head tested if he thinks FFP is gonna be the cure-all for Arsenal Football Club. Because I personally find it very, very hard to believe that financial fair play is gonna really take effect. It's very nice that all these clubs are in favour of it, but some of those clubs are not going to play the game as honestly as Arsenal. Even Man U are sort of agreeing with us apparently now that, you know, financial fair play should take place. But,
yeah.
But I think they might have better accountants. I think we're quite good in the lawyer department, but not so good with accountancy. Or maybe we're a bit too good.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure, but one way or another, I just don't see it really taking effect in the Premier League. Because certainly with Man City, I think they can circumvent the rules with the sponsorship deals.
Mm-hmm. Well, they already have, haven't they?
Yeah, already have it effectively.
But apparently that's one of the most worrying things that came out of what Tom Fox was saying at the AISA meeting last Monday, which was when it comes to when the two big deals, Nike and Emirates, sort of fall away in about sort of 3 or 4 years, that kind of thing. Everyone's queuing up to offer us deals for the kit. It'll be like Warrior, who do Liverpool at the moment. You'll have Adidas, Puma, that kind of thing. As far as naming the stadium, there's only one person in that market. So whether Kevin likes it or not, it does look as though we're going to be at the Emirates Stadium. Whether we like it or not.
It was interesting that Tom Fox actually came out and said, I think you've only got one chance.
Yeah.
And that's it.
It's a ridiculously depressing thing.
So our commercial director is basically ruling out anyone else ever having it.
Absolutely.
I mean, that was kind of suicide.
There was me looking forward to playing at the Vodafone Park. So there we go. The other thing that Ivan came out and said during his speech was that more than anything, we want Arsene to sign a renewal with the bulk of two seasons remaining on his new deal. I mean, Joe, is this prudent or necessary? Is there any danger of him not staying? If he does, is that going to be a huge problem, bearing in mind he's about 246 years old?
I don't mind him being 246, as long as he can do the job. And as long, I think one of the other things he mentioned was this whole succession going on. I'm not aware of it, though, because, I mean, Arsene Wenger's been there since time began, it feels. And I haven't got a problem with that, because I really like the stability of the club, because when you look at Spurs and now they change managers every fortnight, I mean, we really don't want to go down that route. So I think there's a few great things about Arsenal, and that's one of them, that stability. And looking at, you know, Wenger, I think we should keep him there for as long as possible to make sure the succession is you know, just done in the right way. I think it will be. I mean, somebody like Steve Bould, for instance, if he could just take over the reins in a very sort of gentle way and move Arsene upstairs. I mean, I don't want Arsene Wenger to leave the club in the near future. I don't. I mean, I know I complain a lot about decisions, particularly on the transfer front, but you know, sometimes I can't understand the team selection. But I'm not saying I trust in Arsene with every one of his decisions. I don't. But one way or another, he's done a great job over the time he's been there, and we can't forget about that. But I think Steve Bould is the man for the future, or perhaps Guardiola, because he's coming to the club for a special day, apparently.
Allegedly.
So somebody like that. But I just want the transition to be smooth. Mm. That's what I'm saying, really, because that's one of the best things about Arsenal is just, you know, I moan about Hillwood, and I'm sorry about that. I do moan about him. But then when you look at Daniel Levy, you've got to say, I love Hillwood, you know. Compared to Daniel Levy,
Ms. Melrose, excuse me. Do you think we do need to get him signed for the rest of his life, essentially? Or bearing in mind his reaction when someone put it to him before the Southampton game, it was like, "Well, I'll get through the rest of this season, and then we'll go from there." Maybe.
I think it was another ill-timed point, really, when we were just discussing about the fact that we're letting someone like Sanya's contract run down after, and Theo's after all, Van Persie, to then straight away talk about our manager, who some among our fan base feel is already a money-making machine for the board, that he was straight away their priority to get signed down. I don't think that was a good idea. I think Wenger was brilliant to very quickly, you know, dampen that down and say, I'll be the judge of where I'm performing before I start signing anything else. I need to make sure I can still bring something to the table. No lie, I don't think that Arsene Wenger should be allowed to leave the club ever. He should have some kind of, because of his loyalty and because of his knowledge and because of his passion, we should give him a job on the board or wherever we can make use of him. Should he still be the manager in another, what would it be, 2014 he runs out, so they're talking 2000. Yeah. That's a long time. He's been at the club a long time. We already have a few questions about whether he adapts to football in the way that it has been changing. So I don't think it's right to sit there and say, yeah, let's give him to 2016. At the moment, I'm completely on side. I am a Wenger fan. I'm still quite confused about where his role in everything is and the perceived problems that we all feel we have, and whether he contributes to them or if he is like Mike said earlier on, just talking the right game in front of a camera, but kind of a bit useless behind the scenes. So, but I don't think it should be an issue at any point on the fourth game of the season, in the middle of 2 years left to go on his contract, whether he's staying or not. I think we have more pressing issues that we should be focusing on, and they should be focusing on as a club.
But Mike, if his reaction was, well, I'm turning the fuck off at the end of the season and take the France job or go back to Japan, or what he said once was, as soon as I finish doing club football, I want to bring the game through in China and India, the two biggest countries in the world, we've never produced a player. If Wenger does decide to leave at the end of the season, is that a huge bit of danger for the club? Does it indicate something, you know, we haven't considered as a hugely serious thing?
I haven't really thought of it like that, to be quite honest. thanks for spinning me that one. I've been of the opinion that Wenger's been overdue for a while now. I think he run out of ideas. If he can reinvent himself, unlike any other football fan, I used to feel that football fans, everyone, we're all really fickle. I think I still am. And, you know, if Wenger and Bold duo can deliver a trophy or even a sustained title challenge this season, I'll be happy for him to stay. And that's great. But I feel there's an increasing number of Arsenal fans that they're against Wenger. And no matter what happens now, they'll be against Wenger. And I think that's really sad for all that he's done for the club. If he goes, I don't think he'll go at the end of the season, come what may, to be quite honest. He always sees out his contract. You know, he's very proud of that fact, and I don't think he would leave on those terms by walking out. Mm. And I think the board would have to kick him out. That's not going to happen either. So, you know, he's got another 2 years left, come what may. Whether we'd give him a new contract, right now I don't see why it's an issue. I really don't know. Again, I don't see why it was brought up. And again, it shows that you're a bit out of touch with at least part of your fan base.
It's just Gazidis being Gazidis and saying things which, in fairness, Wenger, who clearly doesn't like Gazidis, probably read it or heard it and just went, oh, for fuck's sake, so I've got to have those questions this afternoon.
It was very easy to make Gazidis look a bit of a mug, wasn't it, for Wenger? By just turning around and going, why are we talking about this? I'll decide in 2 years' time, you know? And immediately Gazidis must have been going cringing.
Well, it's fault for bringing it up. I mean, yeah. Again, ill times and ill thought out, really.
It's just Ivan being Ivan. I don't think he's particularly liked by our team manager. Anyway, enough of the upstairs. Let's go downstairs, back onto the pitch itself. Tomorrow night, as it is for us, it's the start of the Champions League this year, where we've been drawn against the mighty HSC Montpellier, Schalke 04 and Olympiacos. Joe, what do you think of our Champions League draw? We couldn't have asked for it to be easier, unless we're Manchester United, who got their usual draw of Debenhams, Manchester Rovers, Leyders reserves, and I don't know, Bros, generally in their group. But, you know, joking aside, we've got a hell of a draw, and we should be fine getting through to the last 16, shouldn't we?
We should be fine getting through to the last 16, as long as we play the best team we've got available. And to me, that would include Giroud playing up front against his old club. The one worry I've got at the moment, well, it's not just the one, I've got a load, but okay, I'm just going to focus on this one because it's Montpellier. Giroud playing against his old club, he's bound to score if he plays from the start. If he plays like 5 minutes at the end, it's going to pour more pressure on the guy's head. I mean, he wants to replace Van Persie. I know he's saying he's not a replacement for Van Persie. In his head, he is a replacement for Van Persie. And Arsene Wenger, I think he's doing it with the best intentions, keeping him on the bench, where, to be honest, he's not going to score many goals sitting on the bench. So it's adding to the pressure. So every game that he plays, even if it be 15 minutes, it's another statistic, and that's more weight on his shoulders. And I just can't understand why he doesn't give him more time. We all know Giroud's going to score. I think Arsene knows in his heart, but he's suddenly got a little bit fearful of playing Giroud. I mean, it's only one game at the moment, but I've got this funny feeling, judging by some of the comments he's come out with, he's not going to play Giroud from the start against Montpellier. And he's bound to score against his old club. I mean, even Theo scored against Southampton. Oxlade-Chamberlain came close, you know, and players tend to do that. They tend to haunt their old clubs, and Montpellier are not the strongest this season. So, I mean, that would be a good start, getting Giroud on the score sheet. Once Giroud is on the score sheet, this guy's going to get 20 goals.
I don't think there's anything to worry about with Giroud. I mean, if you look at the 1990-91 season, where we won the league only losing one game, Alan Smith was the top scorer that season, but he didn't score his first goal until November, ironically, against Southampton, when we beat him 5-0 at home. Who'd ever see that kind of thing happen again? But, you know, so staying with the Champions League, Lindsay, look, we're going to be a little bit complacent this year. I kind of think, because we've got a very, very weak group. We've not really moved our squad around. We've got Manchester City on Sunday. We're playing a poor team who lost 3-1 at home to Rennes last Friday night. He's going to play the youth team tomorrow night, isn't he?
It's dangerous, isn't it? It is a little bit dangerous because, you know, if you don't... I always think with the Champions League is get your points in the bank early. And then whatever you want to do for the rest of that last couple of games, and you can talk about all you want and you can rest all you want, but get them points in the bank and let's do it. Sunday. The good point about having these sort of supposedly easy games, although are there really that many easy games, is that we've got a few players that are potentially going to come back when we hit the business end. So, you know, we've got that sort of bit of grace and a bit of breathing space to get ourselves through to the next rounds of this competition, please God. But I think the worst thing to do would be complacent early doors.
What do you think, Mike? I mean, what's going to happen for us in the Champions League this year, apart from, let's face it, going out to Barcelona in the first knockout round?
That's probably about sums it up, really. I think we should get through the group stage. I don't think complacency will be an issue, to be honest. I think we even got the fixtures in the right order. I don't know who was negotiating on our behalf on that one, but Montpellier away after the start of the season they've had, and Olympiacos, which is always the one which you fear might catch us out. I don't know why, but going to Greece always seems to be problematic. Right at the end, when it hopefully won't matter, that's great. So I think we should be comfortably through. Going further than that, who knows? It's luck of the draw, isn't it? It's a cup competition. I know they like to pretend that the best team in Europe wins it, but Chelsea proved that's not the case last year. So, you know, it's just who you get on the day and how you turn up.
We need the draw to be like it was the year before Mourinho started at Chelsea, winning the European Cup with Porto, when Barcelona and Real Madrid and teams like that were playing each other, and the final turned out to be Monaco versus Porto.
I'd like to avoid Barcelona.
If the Champions League final was Arsenal versus Glenn Torren, I'll be happier than any of you could possibly imagine. Going into the last few minutes of this, the other thing we haven't discussed yet so far this season is we've got a couple of bizarre new kits, whether we like it or not. We've got some Manchester United black on our collar and on our sleeves, and our away kit is quite frankly ridiculous, but as far as Tom Fox was very, very honest last week, that's going to sell an awful lot abroad. Joe, what do you make of our new home and away kits? Have you bought any?
I did buy a shirt.
The
away kit.
You bought the away kit.
It's not a proper away kit.
Prance around the pub. I mean,
I did prance around a fair bit.
Purple and black hoops.
Yes, and I got.
You're in fancy dress as a gay Dennis the Menace. Unbelievable.
Maybe I was. So I got a fair bit of stick about it, but then when I really talked to people, I said, "Is it really that bad? Is it as bad as white?" And everyone said, "No, it's not as bad as white." So I said, "Shut up then, and just let me enjoy it. Let me enjoy the moment." And this is a lucky kit. I mean, we won the first game of the season wearing it.
Purple rain.
So that was enough for me. It was enough for me, and I don't think it's that bad, really. I'm not that happy with the home kit. I don't think it's terrible. We've seen worse. I mean, when they try to get rid of the white sleeves completely, that's a little bit upsetting. But I don't know. I don't really know what they're playing at. But you know, this is. In the modern day age, you know, these kind of things are going to happen. The marketing guys get on board and then they come up with all these quirky ideas about how to increase our exposure in this area and that area and, you know, the moon, Mars and all sorts of places where we might sell kits. You know, so they've got their reasons for it. And if it brings in income that we could actually spend on players, that would be amazing. I'm all for it.
Fair point. Well, what do you think, Ms. Melrose? With Arsenal taking the black hoops on the socks, which Herbert Chapman introduced in the 1930s, and they stick them on the sleeves, because that's the way we can sell you our overpriced shirts. Is that okay for you?
It is what it is, isn't it? The reason they've gone purple on away is because everyone's got a yellow shirt, haven't they? We've all got yellow shirts. We've all got them because that's been our yellow and blue has always been our traditional away kit, so they're bringing purple because they know we're all wearing a different version of yellow away. The home kit, I didn't like it when it first came out, how much stuff can you get the arsehole about, you know, it doesn't keep me up at night, you know, like, ideally I want red and white, I don't want silly fucking things here and there, I don't want a flower on my lapel, I just want to look at it and know that's the Arsenal plan, you know, that's what I want. it's not ideal. I would stick to yellow and blue for a while, and I would stick to not putting hoops from socks on your shoulders. But that's what we've got, and at the end of the day, they don't look too bad when people have got them on. And you know, as long as we win in it, I don't really give a fuck.
Mike, Leighton Orient have now got a red shirt with white sleeves with a little red hoop at the bottom of the short sleeve. Would you rather wear that to a home game this season?
No, because it's Leighton Orient.
It's the correct answer.
I mean, to be fair, I've not had a replica kit. Well, saying that, I bought the 125th one, so that was only last year, wasn't it? But I've probably only bought two or three replica kits in the last 10 years, so I'm a bit like Lindsay. I'm just like going, you know what, people are still going to buy it. I'm not. That's my choice. If you want to get upset about it, that's your business. They'll sell thousands of the damn things, and that's good. I think what Tom Fox said last week at the IASA meeting was that the golden rule is it's got to be red body, white sleeves. He then spun the bit about the blue stuff, but it was like, yeah, all right, whatever. I don't believe you. I'm not falling for that one. He did say the away kit, they've got to take a few chances on, you know, and they've got to give the Nike and the, you know, something to play with. And to be fair, Joe must be in touch with his younger self, because he said, you know, the teenagers love it, and Joe is in his second childhood, clearly.
Yeah, I'm definitely in my second childhood. When I was wearing that t-shirt, I felt great, you know. But
that was
no, the thing is, one of my favourite kits is obviously the yellow, the, you know, because that's what I've seen us winning in the past. When I've got into Arsenal, that's what we were winning in, the yellow shirt and the blue shorts. So that's my favourite kit.
We've had worse
though,
ever. We have had worse than what we've got at the moment.
1982-83, green with dark blue sleeves.
But that's so bad, people love it.
Yeah.
It's retro, some of these, haven't they?
I'll be happier with that than I am with the one we've got at the minute.
I just hope we're all around in 2047 when we can look back on that. You know, that'd be absolutely awesome.
But the thing is, purple doesn't remind us of any other club, does it? I mean, not a nearby club.
Fiorentina.
We're not round the corner, let's be honest.
But it doesn't really say Arsenal either. It's the way they try and justify it.
Purple Sango, they're not round the corner. They are to me when I'm in Japan, but they're not here.
It was like regal colours, wasn't it? From Royal Arsenal.
Yeah.
That was a lovely bit of marketing
spin.
There's
a P in PLC.
And there's something to be said for that. And Ivan Gazidis probably has said it.
I give it 2 years, we'll find out that the guy who played at right back for Dial Square had pink pants. So as a result, that's our shorts going forward. Anyhow, loads of things I'd love to chat about. Unfortunately, it's almost time to wrap up. But before we do, it's just time for Mike to plug the current issue of the Gooner.
Ah, right, okay, yeah, the new issue, issue 227, was out for the Southampton game, available to order, mail order, via the website, www.onlinegooner.com, also via the Gooner app for iPhones and iPads, and the Exactly Editions app for Android. Plenty of choices there.
The app's brilliant, isn't it? The new app's really good.
The app's been completely redeveloped, as I found out over the weekend. It made my trip from Hackney Central to Highbury. It was only 7 minutes. I wish it was 7 hours. Actually, some mornings it is, but even so. Right, well, thanks, Mike. And just for the usual reminder that if you want to email us about anything related to the podcast, our address is goonerpodcast@gmail.com. And with that, it's goodbye from Joe.
Bye.
Lindsay.
Goodbye.
And Mike.
Goodbye.
And we'll be back next month with more. I'm your host, David Udo, and thanks for listening. La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company. Hooray!